Hello, my name's Tim Harris. I'm a financial crime lawyer and a member of the IBA's Anti-Corruption Committee. In the last decade, UK prosecutors have concluded a number of large criminal resolutions with multinational companies totaling fines and disgorgements for profits well in excess of £1.5 billion. This has included settlements with well-known companies such as Airbus, Rolls-Royce and Glencore, amongst others. Typically, the criminal conduct, such as the payment of bribes in these matters, was committed in developing countries with victims there. In 2018, the UK authorities published general principles to compensate victims of economic crime overseas. Such victims could include affected states, organisations and individuals. The UK's lead prosecutor for corruption and complex fraud, the Serious Fraud Office, has committed to consider compensation in all of its cases and use all available legal mechanisms to secure it whenever possible. However, alarmingly, out of this £1.5 billion, the affected foreign victims in which the conduct took place have received less than 1.5% or £20 million to date. I should note this amount does not include the £615 million fine provided for as part of the DPA concluded in December with the gambling giant Entain. While a charitable donation of £20 million was ordered, it is presently unclear whether this is intended to compensate victims of the admitted bribery. I'm joined for this podcast with two lawyers who highlighted this lamentable state of affairs in an article published in September 2023. They have proposed significant reforms to better compensate foreign victims from corporate settlements. Lord Edward Garnier KC is a barrister and member of the House of Lords. As Solicitor General in the UK government, Edward was the architect of the UK's statutory deferred prosecution agreement regime and has acted in a number of the DPAs that followed. Sam Tate, a partner at the law firm RPC and a leading expert in corporate investigations. He has advised on the conclusion of DPAs for corporates and has acted for interested foreign states. I'm also joined by Nicola Bonucci, a highly experienced French criminal lawyer and who served for 26 years at the OECD, serving as the organisation's Director of Legal Affairs. Nicola would discuss the position adopted for the compensation of foreign victims outside the UK and flag whether there is scope for the OECD to look again at incorporating the position of foreign victims into the Convention on Combating Bribery of Foreign Public Officials. So, gentlemen, welcome. Edward, turning first to you, can you outline the current position in the UK regarding returning funds to the victims of overseas criminal conduct following a conviction or an on-trial resolution, such as a deferred prosecution, a DPA, or a guilty plea?
Well, the power to make a compensation order is contained in the Sentencing Act 2020. And under the relevant provision in that act, it says that a compensation order must specify the amount to be paid under it, and that amount must be the amount that the court considers appropriate, having regard to any evidence and any representations that are made by or on behalf of, this is the important bit in my view, the offender or the prosecution. So there's no mention there of the victim. In a number of these cases that you discussed, and indeed in others that you haven't, it seems to me that although the courts are obliged to consider compensation after conviction, and the law does in fact give priority to the payment of compensation over fines, the bar for achieving compensation orders is high. Current case law holds that compensation is intended only for clear and simple cases where the loss to victims is straightforward to assess. However, economic and financial crime, including corruption, is, of course, inherently complex. And that means it's much harder for victims of these crimes to get recognition and compensation. But the Law Commission here in England has recognised that there are significant problems with the current compensation regime. While the Justice Committee in the House of Commons in Parliament has drawn attention to the non-financial harm suffered by victims of fraud in particular, and recommended that maximising the recovery of assets for victim compensation should be a priority for investigatory bodies. Now, this strikes me as a matter of common sense and justice, that where a crime is committed overseas and where the victims of that crime are overseas, it's not good enough for the English courts and the English Parliament, the British Parliament, to say it's all too difficult. You can make it difficult, but it doesn't have to be.
I see. Thank you. And so, notwithstanding the best intentions behind the UK principles and the sentencing guidelines that prioritise compensation, in your mind, why has so little money been ordered and returned under these resolutions by the UK government?
In my view, because there is little incentive to the prosecution, even less to the defendant company or the defendant human being, to enter into the question of what should be done about it. The serious fraud office or the prosecution, they've got the case done, they want to move on. And it's far easier to say, oh, it's all too complex, it's all too complicated. If the victim believe that they have a claim to make, well, then they can sue. They can bring civil proceedings against the defendant company. And there the civil court can go through all the accounts, deal with all the complicated evidence and so forth that is no doubt going to be required. But as often as not, and Sam, I think, can help on this, as often as not, it's not so complex as the protagonists would have you believe. Yes, there are going to be matters of accounting. There are going to be matters of causation. There are going to be matters of finding who is the proper victim to be compensated. But the sort of cases that you mentioned, Rolls-Royce, Glencore, and so on, they were presided over by highly experienced senior judges who are experts both in the criminal law, but also are experts in commercial law. And I find it difficult to believe that they would find it difficult to get to the heart of the problem, who deserves to be compensated and in what amount. And it seems to me that these are pretty feeble excuses. So it's all too complicated, go and sue. That's not good enough. And the number that you mentioned, over 1.5 billion, I think was the number you mentioned, of which a tiny percentage has gone in compensation to overseas victims, I think it's just embarrassing. And it seems to me that Parliament needs to do something about it. And indeed, in the Victims and Prisoners Bill, which is a bill currently before the House of Lords, with Sam's help, I'm putting down an amendment or a new clause to open up this area for discussion. And I hope that the government will come forward with a sensible and coherent response.
Okay, well, thanks for that. And I mean, Sam, do you want to add to the position that you'd like to see reform building on the clause there that Edward mentioned?
Yes, I'd be delighted to, Tim. I mean, the first thing I'd say, which is a bit soundbitey, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that compensation needs to be paid, not just paid lip service to. So there are plenty of ways of getting this right, actually, in terms of returning or paying compensation to victims. But the current system is not one of them. But you can see that because of what's happened in the last 10 years. And so the work that Edward and I have done, we're actually with the input from 10 leading KCs, so King's Counsel, and 10 heads of financial crime at leading firms across the London and indeed the globe, has produced ultimately a series of ideas about how this could be changed, which is really focused on the sentencing guidelines. There are some problems you need to work through. They are, as Edward says, overcomable. The first is, well, who is the victim? And we would suggest that the proper party for distributing funds or being approached as a victim is the state, except in wholly unusual circumstances. Our government will have relationships with states, and it often has memorandums of understanding on how to return funds to them. And that's certainly the case with Nigeria, and there are very few states where you don't have active engagement by the charity sector or by charitable finances like the BII. So there are ways of returning this money to those states. And the proposals that we have put together in the form of revised sentencing guidelines set this out. So who the victim would be, and then the sum which would be paid. And we have suggested, and you've seen this, Tim, in the article in the Times, is the higher of either the profit made by the offending company or the bribes it paid. And it would have to be a very unsuccessful company having paid bribes for the amount of profits not to be higher. So normally it would be the amounts of profits, which is similar to the disgorgement figure.
Just picking you up on that, I can see how a compensation order based on the amount of the bribe that has gone into the pocket of the corrupt official and not the state's treasury would be fair and the loss easy quantifiable. But would a compensation order based on the company's profit from the contract not go significantly beyond the affected victim country's loss, assuming the services or goods were appropriately delivered?
I think here it's a slightly different way of thinking about it. And the question is, who has been unjustly enriched at whose loss? And I think here, if the company has been unjustly enriched, then that money or that benefit ought to go to the victims. That's what we say. And that is a figure, of course, which is calculated. You might very well say, well, why should that disgorgement go to the state? So why should that sum go to the state? And why should it be the basis for the fine? Because it's a multiplier of that figure, which then becomes the fine that is also paid to the state. So what we're saying is, take a figure that you already get, that you already say the company shouldn't be entitled to, but our country should be, only because we prosecute it, and we give it to the victims. And that seems to me to be straightforward and just. It avoids also the difficulty of identifying every single different victim group and trying to work out their loss, if you can engage with them, which we often can't, whereas you can normally engage with the state.
I see. And so at the moment, the very large portion of the settlement figure concluded against the company is an amount of the profit, the disgorgement of the profit. If a significant amount of this is going to the affected victim state, it presumably follows that it wouldn't be going to the UK taxpayer.
There's some things to think about here. In international corruption, the multiplier will normally be three or four times. And what that means is the state is getting three or four times that disgorgement figure. So it is getting very significant sums for its work in terms of bringing the prosecution. And as we know from the SFO, the amount that it recovers in these DPAs is far higher than its total running costs for all cases. So it is being properly recompensed for its work, if we want to see it that way. The second thing is that these funds are not structural. It's not that Her Majesty's Treasury predicts that we'll have so much money from DPAs each year and therefore says, well, look, we're going to spend X or Y on teachers or hospitals or dialysis machines. The money goes up. It was high in 2017. It was low in 2022, almost nothing. So we don't build these sums into our costings as a government. In any event, it's not ours. So I would say that compensation is a right, and it makes the UK, and I'm sure we'll come on to this, but it damages our reputation internationally. There is plenty of money in the pot for the UK and still to pay compensation to victims, which we should do, rather than pretend that we do or pay lip service to the idea of compensation.
And the compensation is not coming from the government. It's coming from the defendant company, which has either been convicted or put its hands up. And so it strikes me that there's a form of intellectual laziness going on within the system, which is preventing justice being done.
Okay, well, thank you. And that's interesting. And you've mentioned there the damage to the UK's reputation and also the position of the company. Part of the attractiveness of the DPA regime for corporates is that the resolution promises to provide certainty rather than expose it to years of investigative costs and management time. And also that it receives a significantly lower fine than it would do if it was prosecuted and convicted. And I suppose the issue with the UK's failing to compensate foreign states is that the company is exposed to the potential for long-tail litigation brought by the affected state out with the DPA, but also the UK authorities. Now, Sam, do you have a sense of how corporates, turning to the corporates, would respond to wrapping the compensation for foreign victims, especially those outside of the OECD, into these non-trial resolution settlements?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, I can't speak for all corporates. There are lots of them. But I think I can represent the views of some that I've spoken to. And that is that they would prefer to pay compensation than tax. So if the amount that they have to pay in total is the same, then there's a preference for paying money through charities to particular projects or sets of projects in a state where they can see that money being spent. Also, they will often be trying to repair their relationships in those states, particularly the big infrastructure or energy companies. And they may otherwise, as you say, have to pay sums in settlement there. So there's a preference for paying compensation. And I think actually many people are drawn towards the justness of it. Of paying that compensation if the system allowed for it. If we do not involve victim states in the way that we've been doing now for years, then they will put up their hand and say, this cannot be. You know, they are going to bring those claims. They're going to be rattling their pots and pans and making valid complaints. And they may set up their own organizations to conduct DPAs. If our system doesn't work, they will set up their own. And that will cause more fragmentation in the system and more difficulty for companies. So you don't need to be a very forward-looking company in order to see that and want to have proper compensation. You can incentivize companies to pay compensation and actively engage with the state and with the programs they might want to put in by reducing the multiplier. So if they're really actively engaged in compensation and they're making a difference, then reduce the multiplier, i.e. the fine could go down. That is actually allowed for in the current sentencing guidelines. It's just not focused on.
Okay, thank you. And so in terms of the process to publish the amended sentencing guidelines and the other work that you're doing, what is your timeline with that?
Well, the amendment or the new clause to the Victims and Prisoners Bill will probably be debated in the House of Lords towards the end of this month. The bill's starting its second day of committee tomorrow, and this is a new clause which will be debated probably in the third or fourth day of committee. I don't expect it to be just cut and pasted and put into law by the government, but I do expect the government to respond. But we're trying to build up a head of steam which will make it unacceptable not to do something. And whether it's along the lines that Sam and I propose, whether it's along the lines that the government itself can come up with, I think this train is moving. And I think the sentencing guidelines need to be and will be amended in order to accommodate the needs of victims and to recognise the justice in the case of which is behind our arguments. I would imagine the bill as a whole will get into law in the summer of this year, 2024. And I would be extremely disappointed if there is not some indication from the government, even if it's not within the terms of the bill or act as it will be, to amend the sentencing guidelines along the lines which Sam and I are hoping for.
Thank you. And Nicola, from your experience, can you give us a sense of how other European countries are approaching the issue of compensating foreign states?
Well, first, let me say indeed that the discussion that is taking place in the UK is not specific to the UK. Let me recall that first, just to start with the basics, there is an Article 35 in the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, which provides for basically compensation for damage. And this article has been subscribed not only by the UK, but by all the Western countries. And the discussion has picked up steam in the last few years in other countries than the UK, stemming from the discussion on asset recovery. Let's be clear, asset recovery is a different issue because here we're talking about specific assets that have been illicitly stolen and put abroad. But at the end of the day, the way in which the matter can be settled or solved is pretty much the same. Now, if you look at asset recovery, you have a few countries like France and Switzerland that have put in place a fairly specific legislation, and Switzerland in particular has been quite active in the last few years in terms of asset recovery. I can recall the case of Mrs. Karimova in Uzbekistan, in which Switzerland and Uzbekistan agreed that the asset will be used for the benefit of the people of Uzbekistan with the help of the United Nations Trust Fund. So this mechanism, which again deals with asset recovery, we could imagine something like that in terms of compensation of victims. And in fact, this is exactly what has been done in some of the MDBs in the multilateral development banks. You may remember that some years ago, Siemens, as part of the settlement with the bank, agreed to set up a Siemens Integrity Initiative, which was basically funding, not necessarily, strictly speaking, the victims, but at least compensating the global community. And in a more recent case, the Inter-American Development Bank, Oberdrecht, has agreed also to a similar system. So in terms of compensation of victims, the situation in the UK is not good, but I have to say it's not much worse than in other countries. There are some countries that have legislation in place, like Lithuania or like France. And I would like to say maybe a word about France, because even though this is recent and needs to be tested, but there is an interesting approach with the French legislation. So in the French legislation, a bit like in the UK, there is this idea that you should compensate as part of the DPA. The French law enforcement authorities, the PNF, has issued guidelines in 2023. And in the guidelines, they have inserted aggravating and mitigating factor. And a big mitigating factor for the company is the identification and compensation of the victim. So in a sense, prior or as a condition for the DPA or the CEGIP, which is the terminology used in France. As of today, I'm not aware of any company who has made use of this particular provision or any CEGIP which use this particular provision. But I think this is also an interesting approach, which is, and going back to what Sam was saying, and even Lord Gardiner, you know, incentivize the state, but also incentivize the company to try to identify and compensate the victim.
Yeah, thank you, Nicola. The OECD Convention on Combating Bribery contains no provision requiring states to take steps to compensate victims of bribes paid to foreign officials. And I understand this submission was deliberate and is highly politically sensitive. Are you able to speak to how the United Nations and the OECD are considering this issue and whether there is any prospect that the bribery convention could be amended?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There is no provision in the OECD Anti-Bribery Convention, contrary to the United Nations Convention Against Corruption. And I would say, even more worrying or regrettable, there is no provision or no mention of this issue of victim compensation in the 2021 recommendation that the OECD has adopted, which, on the other hand, put a lot of emphasis also on the demand side and incentives. So you are right. It is a political sensitive issue. So how we can work out something? First, interesting to note that as we speak, there is a document jointly prepared by UNODC and OECD, which is a resource guide on state measures for strengthening business integrity, which is the second edition of the document, which was issued 10 years ago, which includes victim compensation in the paper. Naturally, this is not a legally binding document. And I don't really foresee, Tim, answering your question straightforward, I don't really foresee any amendment to the OECD Anti-Bribery Convention. However, this document could provide a useful starting point. So what are the options if we don't amend the convention per se? The first option is, for example, we could imagine a joint guidance from UNODC and OECD on the matter, along the lines of some of the principles that Sam and Lord Garnier have highlighted, some of the challenges, also recognizing some of the challenges, but providing a very clear policy direction about identification, assessment of the damage, and compensation. Another option that could be considered, because this is one of the difficulties, naturally, is that if you have a country which takes a very bold position and the others are not following, then you may create another set of disparities in the approach. One other option would be to have a separate protocol or a separate agreement on this issue. It may sound crazy, but if you look at environment, for example, there is an International Oil Pollution Compensation Fund, which was established some years ago, both by governments and companies, which provides compensation for oil pollution damage resulting from the spill of the tankers. Mm-hmm. One could imagine something like that in terms of compensation of victims. This would have some advantages in terms of also providing this to a third body and taking off some of the political tension. In any case, you know, asset recovery shows that this can be done because it has been done by some countries, like, as I said, France and Switzerland, what Sam and Lord Garnier said about the UK, but I would probably enlarge my answer. I think if the Western countries do not start to tackle this issue seriously, then they risk really losing the cooperation of some of the countries in which the facts are happening. And it is already very difficult to investigate and prosecute a foreign bribery case. And if the country in which the bribe has taken place then refuses to cooperate because it feels that it doesn't get its share, it will make investigation and prosecution even more difficult.
Yeah, I think that's clear. And finally, Edward, I understand that you're positive at that the UK government will be able to move the summer 2024. Is there a risk that this may be put in the bucket of either A, it's a multilateral issue that needs to be dealt with at an OECD level, or it's just too difficult? What are your thoughts actually thinking realistically about the practicalities of this?
Well, there's the moral and legal imperative of getting something done, but there are other inconveniences, like, for example, the political calendar. And we are likely to have a general election either this May or in October or November. And so that will always provide a government with a reason for not burdening Parliament with further legislation or having to think about adjusting the sentencing guidelines, although Parliament doesn't need to be involved in the detail of adjusting the sentencing guidelines. It's really just a question of political will. The arguments that Sam has been putting forward, and which I agree with, and the polite concern that Nicola has expressed looking from France about what's going on here, unarguable. And unless the government gets a grip on this, it'll run away. This is not a difficult problem to solve. Sam and I, in that article, have come up with an outline of a scheme. Well, if the government don't like it, we'll adjust it or come back with their own scheme. But don't just sit there doing nothing and saying it's all too difficult. There is an unanswerable case for requiring companies that commit crimes overseas, crimes of corruption, to compensate their victim. Yes, it's not going to be always easy to identify the victim. It's not always going to be easy to identify the quantum of the compensation. But these are not insoluble problems. They just require a bit of effort.
Yeah, thank you. Sam, did you have any final comments?
Well, I've yet to meet a person who kind of doesn't agree that compensation should be paid. Everybody agrees it should be paid. And so it is this kind of legal and practical issue. And that's why we brought together a group. And that's why we've kind of set out a proposal of how you approach it legally and practically. And I agree with Lord Garnier that really it can be done. It should be done. And it should be done now. And I think it doesn't matter what flavour of government we have. Those things will remain because we'll still be the UK floating in a bit of the North Sea and Irish Sea, and we'll still need to engage with everybody else in the world. And if we don't engage fairly, we're going to have the same problems, whatever the government is. And I think that the zeitgeist, which Nicola is talking about, is towards compensation because it makes sense around the world. And I do think we should link in. I don't think we should delay, but I do think that we should work in tandem with our European partners and friends on this.
It's clear that it's in the UK and other Western states' interest to see that reform is made to enable the states and individuals that are the victims of economic crime committed by Western companies, that they are adequately compensated. And it's encouraging to see, too, that reforms are in train.
And I'm very interested to see how this matter develops over the next 6 months or so. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.